Welcome to Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani. On Book Spectrum, we bring you books by authors from the longtime writers to new ones out of fields from across the spectrum. With me today is a man who I don't think he can be really categorized. Not just a writer, so that's a good thing. Is he a businessman? Well, he did found SM&A, led several companies. Keep in mind, that's a NASDAQ company. And he's what we call a serial entrepreneur. Is he an adventurer? Well, in 1992, at the end of the Cold War, Stephen Myers became the first American since Charles Lindbergh, and that was back in 1931, to pilot an aircraft all the way into the Russian Kamchatka Peninsula. And that's to do business. A life improvement specialist. Well, his dealings in post-Soviet territories have made lives better for their populations. And he's doing this with his new book for business leaders and CEOs as well as entrepreneurs. He's a mathematician, served in the Air Force. And that's only a short list. We wanted to learn more about Stephen Myers after reading his book Crosswinds, Adventures in Entrepreneurship in the Russian Far East. So I have him here. Welcome to Book Spectrum, Stephen Myers.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. Your new book, Crosswinds, is about the startup of a business in a remote part of Russia after the Soviet Union fell. This book is filled with danger and adventure, but also gives us a wonderful tour of Russia and its people. And yes, it also is sort of a simulator or a guidebook for CEOs. You include photos of your journeys and explanations of what you've done. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, I have been working on this book for a very long time, and the timing seemed particularly propitious this year to come out with it, because the book's really about courage. And right now, that's something that the world needs very much.
Dionne Warwick should join you with this and saying, what the world needs now is courage, sweet courage. That's good. I like that. Love and courage. We need both of those, right?
Well, I think courage is the one indispensable factor in succeeding at just about anything in this world. And I wanted to, that's really the theme of the book. I wanted to bring the reader along with me on a journey of exploration in the Russian Far East and experience what courage looks and feels like on virtually every page of the book.
You also say, and this is your motto, the cornerstone of courage is optimism. When you lecture, that's the first thing you say to MBA students every term. If you're not an optimist, then you're on the wrong career path if you're thinking about being an entrepreneur. That seems to make sense, though, Stephen Myers. The trials of entrepreneurship are not really good for pessimists.
No, they're absolutely not. You know, I never realized I was an optimist until I was 20. I had a terrible mountain climbing accident, and we talk a little bit about that in the book. But I was left for dead at the bottom of a mountain crevasse on Mount Rainier, and it was really an unsurvivable experience. I fell 30 feet before I hit anything. And if you were watching this, you know, if you saw the YouTube video of this happening, you'd say the guy's dead. There's no way. I did survive, and how I survived was amazing. But what was really important about that experience is what I learned from it, and that was that it had never occurred to me at any time, including during the fall, that I would not survive. It was just a question of what was I going to do to survive. And if I could just figure out how to fill in the blank, I'd find a way to survive and live through this. It became the theme for the rest of my life, because what I realized was that it was my nature. And so courage has to come from somewhere, you know, especially in entrepreneurship, because the only one that's going to think that any idea you have for success is going to work is your mother. And maybe she won't even like it. So you have to have the ability to stand up to all the negativity in the world about your ability to achieve your dreams. And so for me, that sense of courage that comes from optimism. If I think I can, I will. If it's to be, it's up to me.
Hey, that little engine that could has really taught a lot of people some good lessons. And we could all look back at that, couldn't we?
We could. My message to people who have the desire to achieve something is that you can do it. You know, you just have to own it. You have to take the leadership for it. You have to push through all of the uncertainties that are making you afraid. And by the way, that uncertainty accompanies everything in life, particularly the year 2020. Every day is a study in uncertainty. And so you have to find the courage to move forward. Optimism isn't the only place that it can come from. I read a wonderful book a few months ago about a former Navy SEAL whose courage came from his sense of compassion. So there's many places from which you can find courage, but you'll need it. And once you know where it's coming from, and you know you have that in your pocket, it's invaluable.
And this way, any entrepreneur or business guy who's facing major adversity, saying, "I'm not sure I can come back from this economic problem or losing all these customers," it's a tough one. All they need to do is read your book or check out that video you discussed about you falling down the mountain, and saying, "Well, this guy fell down a mountain and came back to build a NASDAQ listed consulting firm, do business in the far east of Russia, and make a lot of other people's lives a lot better. I think we can survive a couple of client losses."
That's right. There is no, by the way, there is no video. I was making a euphemism, but you're exactly right. We have control over nothing in life. Life is uncertainty. Every day is a study in uncertainty. You have to, we have things happen to us, like falling into a crevasse. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? Well, it sounds like it was a really bad thing, but it actually turned out to be a really good thing because of what I learned from that and how it informed how I thought about the world and how I've proceeded ever since.
Stephen Myers is with me on Book Spectrum. The book, Crosswinds, Adventures and Entrepreneurship in the Russian Far East. This book, Stephen, focuses a lot on entrepreneurship and is quite a good blueprint of how to start up a business. You say entrepreneurs are a rare and peculiar breed of people, driven, never satisfied, never content, and very hungry, yet they have something to prove. What characteristics have enabled you to come as far as you have and teach others to do so, not only through this book, but obviously by example?
Well, I think once you understand your nature, it informs you about how you're going to deal with the world. Optimists are born, not made. By the way, it's not that optimists are better than pessimists. We need the right proportion of each in our world. If you let the optimists rule the nest, the next thing you know, they'll be running everybody off a cliff. On the other hand, if you put the pessimists in charge, they just won't get anything done. So you need a mix, that dynamic tension. If I'm the CEO of a business, I certainly don't want an optimist for my chief financial officer. And if I was going to go to work for somebody, who was going to go into a new venture, I'm certainly not interested in being involved with somebody who isn't optimistic, who isn't inspirational. So it really starts with nature. You know, who are you and what drives you? What do you hope to achieve?
A lot of people don't really know your background yet unless they've read the book already or went to your website, which we'll talk about and we'll direct people to very soon. Your work experience reads like an adventure novel in and of itself. That's before this novel. I only scratched the surface in the introduction, Stephen. You've worked with NASA and the Department of Defense prime contractors. You worked on Reagan's Star Wars missile defense system. And more recently, you served on the Department of Homeland Security Task Force on Cyber Resources. You had a big role in getting the global position positioning system into orbit. Having said that, tell us about your company. I want our listeners to know a little bit more about you, about SMNA and how your work on GPS impacted the success of your mission and everything you've done, and of course, your flight into the Kamchatka Peninsula.
Well, that's a lot. So let me begin by saying that I was born to a 17-year-old unwed mother, and she and I and her Belarus immigrant father lived in a one-room apartment in the east side of Los Angeles till I was five. And when I was 17, I went into the Air Force. So I know what it is to be, to grow up in poverty. I know what it is to grow up in, as an inner city child, undereducated, and without resources. The military actually transformed me. They reparented me. They taught me competence, gave me discipline. Most importantly, they taught me how to learn. And by the time I was 24, I was at Stanford University. I went back into the Air Force after Stanford. I wanted to be a test pilot and an astronaut. I had studied engineering, but I took my degree in mathematics. And but my timing was bad, and I had to get out of the Air Force because of the end of the Vietnam War. They just had too many pilots, and I was, you know, my seniority was low. And so, but I kept up my aviation career running in parallel. I've been flying for over 50 years. I have 12 jet type ratings. And by the way, one is in the Boeing 777. So I've flown all over the world. I've flown many kinds of aircraft, had a wonderful aviation career, but that was always kind of my side career. My primary career was in aerospace and defense and national security. I've had the opportunity to work on a lot of important government programs because of my engineering and program management background. Interestingly, where all of this tied into going to Kamchatka, it was my background as an entrepreneur, starting a aerospace and defense management consulting company. That company, by the way, grew to 800 people and about $110 million a year in revenue before it was ultimately sold to, it was on the NASDAQ for 10 years and was ultimately sold to private equity. The projects we got to work on actually impacted both creating the opportunity for me to be the first to go to Kamchatka, but also providing crucial navigation support when I got there. So the global positioning system was just coming online in 1992. It doesn't sound like it's a big deal. Maybe not flying up to Alaska, to Nome, across the Bering Straits into Chukotka in Siberia, and then down the Kamchatka Peninsula to Petropavlovsk. That's most of the way to Japan. So the next stop would be the Sakhalin Islands and Hokkaido Island, where Sapporo is, and it's a long trip. That's about 8,000 nautical miles, what I just described. And in 1992, flying was very different than it is today in terms of navigation support. In that part of the world, it was more like the 1930s in terms of the navigational support available. So it's really quite a complex and dangerous undertaking to fly an aircraft into that region. And just to give you an idea, you know, the last aircraft that had flown into that region that didn't belong there was KAL-007, the Korean Airlines, and they got shot down. I actually landed at the base where the MiG fighter had taken off that shot that airliner down, had come from. Pretty spooky experience. The hair on the back of my head was standing up as I'm taxiing in, passing rows of MiG fighters with the red stars on the tails. It was pretty scary for a cold warrior.
Stephen Myers is with me on Book Spectrum. We're talking about his book, Crosswinds, Adventures and Entrepreneurship in the Russian Far East. Yes, the flying was pretty difficult as far as putting that in perspective as technology in the far eastern part of Russia. However, there was also another dangerous aspect to the whole thing. You were, well, let's put it this way. In the book, you described some visitations you had from people on their side and our side. What happened there? Without giving up too much, because I believe our listeners would like to check it out in the book.
Well, sure. So, ultimately, we succeed in getting there and to Kamchatka. And up until that point, nobody had been there. It was the most closed area in all of the Soviet Union. It was impossible to get there. They'd shoot down anybody that went anywhere near the Kamchatka Peninsula. So this is happening 6 months after the fall of the Soviet Union. So it's now the summer of 1992. We get there. We've been invited. It's super complicated making that happen. We get there. I have a twin-engine prop jet aircraft we're using for this mission that's perfect. And it's like Lindbergh landing in Paris when I get to Kamchatka. The reception was amazing. Hundreds and hundreds of people crowding around the aircraft. The chief navigator for the former Soviet region, now Russian region, chief navigator, upon hearing the story of how we got there, how we flew there, took off his wings and pinned them onto my jacket. So that was a great moment. And we proceeded to spend a couple of weeks touring the Kamchatka Peninsula as the guest of the authorities, looking for entrepreneurial opportunity. But really having a bit of a boondoggle, just a great time. And what we found there was a land that was just magical. So much like California, if you could imagine California around 1848, just before the gold rush, beautiful mountains, rivers, glaciers, lots and lots of mountains, actually volcanoes. And it was just fabulous. Well, I get an idea that is a mind blower for entrepreneurial opportunity in the region. I want to create something akin to the Hudson Bay Company and end up making an agreement with the governor of Kamchatka as my new business partner and some others that were critical to our success. And we proceed to convert that military air base at Petropavlovsk, it's called Elizovo, into an international cargo aircraft refueling base. And we get the International Civil Aviation Organization to give us the route structure. The FAA is completely cooperative with us. We end up getting contracts with all of the international cargo carriers to come in to our now cheaper gas station and start refueling. And after 3 years, we're the largest infuser of capital into that region, operating. It was an incredible business that we had created. Well, the way the book starts, two U.S. government agents are coming into my office to see me in Orange County, California, Newport Beach. And Now, I want you to imagine what these guys look like. These are two very large men. You know, they look more like
bad dudes.
Big dudes. Two big dudes, very big dudes, with dressed in black, with big guns and very impressive credentials. You know, these aren't like IRS guys, you know. They don't even look like, you know, FBI guys. You've never seen guys like these before. They look more like linebackers for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so they're there to see me because they have some news. They have hard intelligence that I'm going to be kidnapped when I go to Moscow for a scheduled board meeting that's a couple months later. And they are pleading with me not to go, because they're the ones that are going to have to come and rescue me, and they don't think they're going to be able to do it. And so that's the way the book starts. The start of the book actually sets up the climax for the story, which is, what do I do with this information? So the way the book starts is with them coming into my office, and then I back up and I tell the story about how we got to that point over the prior 4 years, and then we move on from there. But what's really scary about it isn't just my concern for my own safety, but I have a lot of people on the ground over there. And if they can't, the bad guys can't get their hands on me, why not take one or two or three of my lieutenants? So I basically, every person on the ground in Russia that's working for me is exposed. This is a really, really serious problem.
In the book, you talk about how you kind of dealt with that problem. There was also another section of the book where you wound up dealing with an agent from the CIA in an elevator.
Yeah, that's a funny story. So you want me to tell that story? I'll be happy to share that. I'm at CIA headquarters in Langley on another project that I'm working on in my national security role. And I'm in an elevator. So I want you to imagine this. I'm at CIA headquarters in Langley. I'm in an elevator by myself going up to some floor to go to some meeting with some folks about some stuff. And this guy, the elevator door opens and this guy gets into the elevator. And I suddenly feel like I'm in a Tom Clancy movie, because this guy, who's another big guy, is dressed from head to toe in a Mujahideen outfit. I mean, he looks straight out of Central Casting. Like 10 minutes ago, he was walking around in Kabul. And and he's standing there in the elevator, and I am desperately trying not to stare at him. And I am just riveted by, because he looked absolutely like he was, you know, he was an Afghan. And maybe he was, for all I know, but all I could think about as I was standing there, are we going to the same meeting? I hope not.
Oh, boy.
I have another great story to tell you. I'd like to tell you another great story you might find really interesting. You can, since you're cutting this all up to make a thing.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to work it into a radio interview yet, but I want to tell you the story, because you were asking me about advice for budding entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
And that's sort of how you started this interview. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about that.
I wanted to get into that too, because you said, Stephen, in the book by Stephen Myers here, my guest on Book Spectrum is Crosswinds, Adventures and Entrepreneurship in the Russian Far East. Because there are flight simulators. You're a pilot, right? But what about simulators for business people or entrepreneurs or CEOs? This book is kind of like that.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because coach CEOs for a living now. That's my primary business. By the way, if I can put in a plug for my book, easy to get to my book, you can go to my website. That's www.stephenmyers.com. And there's a very cool video to introduce you on my website to my coaching business, and talk about how I use simulation in coaching. So my thesis is that and you can also, by the way, there's a link to go to Amazon so you can get my book on Amazon. So easy to get there, www.stephenmyers.com. Now, one of my observations is that CEOs and pilots, jet pilots, have a lot more in common than you would think. I want to think about that for a moment. What's the difference between being the CEO of a business and a jet pilot? You both have to provide leadership. You both have to own what you're doing. You have other people's lives in your hands, and you have to have a lot of clarity about what you're doing, why you're doing it, where you're going, what are you hoping to achieve. But here's the big difference between jet pilots and CEOs. CEOs crash all the time. Jet pilots very, very rarely crash. In fact, I was just in Denver at the United Airlines Flight Training Center in October, getting my type rating in the Boeing 777. And my instructor was the former chief pilot of the United Airlines Boeing 777 fleet. And he made the observation that it's been 45 years or more since a United Airlines pilot killed a passenger. Wow, what a safety record. Can you imagine that?
That's pretty good. That's really good.
Now, the question is, why is that? Why is it that jet pilots so rarely crash an airplane? Okay, and the answer is training and simulation. Jet pilots have to go to recurrent training. First of all, they have to be very well trained. I mean, think about it. You can't fly a jet unless you have an airline transport pilot's license, and you need to get a type rating, you know, for the kind of jet you're flying. You know, if you're flying a, you know, a BMW, that's different than flying a Mercedes-Benz or a Tesla. You need type ratings for the different kinds of aircraft that you're flying. I think we call those types. Well, you have to go to ground school. You have to take a written exam. You have to take an oral exam. You have to pass a check ride. And guess what? You have to come back and do that every year. Every year. The International Civil Aviation Organization requires that. You can't get aircraft insurance without it. All of that recurrent training, I've been to about 50 schools, and the training experience is cumulative because every simulation is different. You know, even if you're presumably practicing the same things, they don't put the emphasis on things they can see right away you do well. The instructors are going to put the emphasis on the things where, well, you're okay, but let's see what happens if we increase the stress here. Let's break a few things. Let's make the weather worse. Let's create more problems. Let's put an engine on fire. You know, they'll just keep upping the bar until they find the point where they can see that you pretty much hit your limit. And as time goes along, you get better and better and better at that. Well, CEOs don't do that. CEOs, and I'm a four-time CEO. I've been the CEO of different kinds of companies. And what I observe is that CEOs habitually wing it. You know, it's not that we don't do our homework. It's that, you know, flying the actual airplane is very different than sitting there armchair flying it. Simulators try to replicate that flying experience, creating as much realism as possible. By the time you get to something like a Boeing 777 level D simulator, you cannot tell the difference between that and the real world. That plane, you in about 30 seconds forget you're in a simulator. You think it's real. You really do. A lot of fun. So I recommend that CEOs find a way to create stress tests for their business by creating simulations. So I have a whole process that I go through with my clients in order to do that, which starts with understanding what their business is all about, how they operate, so we can create a dashboard that replicates what happens, you know, if you start to change the variables. You know, CEOs don't run out of ideas. They run out of money. So the key, right, in aviation, that's like, you know, we run out of fuel.
Yeah, that's not whatever, good either. There we go.
Whatever you do, if I can tell you three things not to do as a pilot that anybody can relate to, do not run out of fuel, right? Let's start with that.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
And don't get lost, right? And don't crash the plane. Those are my three rules.
Those are pretty big rules.
Don't run out of gas, don't get lost. The big rules, easy.
Stephen,
fun interview, isn't it?
Yeah, I love this one. This is great. And let's go with this one. Stephen, you're working on a new book, I understand, too. Can you give us a little tease about that?
Well, I have a theory about MH370 that's very different than anything that has been written or passed around as urban legend. My next book is about what I think happened, and it's going to be a thriller. It is a fabulous story. I plan to publish it by the end of next year. That's one of the reasons that I was in Denver getting my type rating on the Boeing 777. That, of course, was a 777-200ER that was lost. And so I need to be able to speak about the aircraft and everything that was going on with it with credibility. And I think after 50 years of flying and 12 jet type ratings, including the Boeing 777, that gives me the foundation I need to be able to speak to it. But I promise you the story is cinematic. How's that for a teaser?
I think I like that. That's good. That's pretty awesome. Stephen Myers, thank you again for being with us on Book Spectrum.
It's been an honor. Thank you for having me, Chris.
It's been an honor having you here as well, Stephen. The book, Crosswinds, Adventures and Entrepreneurship in the Russian Far East. You can find that on Stephen Myers' website. Stephen?
Yes, it's Stephen Myers, that's STEBENMYERS, www.stephenmyers.com, or you can go onto Amazon and type in Crosswinds, two words, Cross Winds, Winds, and type in my name, Stephen Myers, and it'll pop right up. I promise you a good read.
You can find a link to Stephen's website also on our website, bookspectrum.com. Once again, the book, Crosswinds, Adventures and Entrepreneurship in the Russian Far East by Stephen Myers. I'm Chris Cordani. Thank you for listening to Book Spectrum.